cartoons from present and the past. Every week will be an animated bash. Woo! What a cartoon! What a cartoon! Maybe a short but mostly sharp. We'll talk, we'll analyze, exploring as we go. What a cartoon! What a cartoon! What a cartoon!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to What a Cartoon, where we're forced to live in a terrible future. I am your host, Gentleman Assassin Bob Mackey, and this is an audio exploration of every cartoon ever. Who else is here with me today?
Henry Gilbert, and the sword will break against my belly.
I'll take your word for it. And our special guest...
Dave Whittington, and I'm more powerful than all of you combined.
So, Dave, you're a stranger, and I was told never to talk to strangers. Why are you here in the small room with us? We need to know.
Well, I did this very generous thing in giving you so much money that you were forced to have me on.
That's true. If you give us enough money, can buy you friendship on, but only on Patreon.
Only on Patreon.
That is.
Only through the medium of Patreon.
It's true, and we love it.
Yes, thank you very much. This is our second backer guest episode.
Yes.
And shockingly, it's also from the same creative team
as
the other one.
I feel like there's some collusion going on.
Well, yeah, so why, out of all the shows, we gave you a choice of like, all right, what show do you want with it? The only rule was like, no pornography. That was the one thing.
Very disappointing, by the way.
So why out of all of them was your first pick Samurai Jack, The Princess and the Bounty Hunters?
Yeah, I wish I had some like crazy cool reasoning for that, but it's just, I just really love this episode. It's actually not necessarily super well suited to a one-off podcast about it, but
I think it's a great pick.
Representative of Samurai Jack that well in the sense that it's a very atypical episode. So if you're new to the show, this is not what the show is
and
normally
that he's,
like.
He's barely in it and doesn't talk.
Yeah.
To reiterate, today's episode is the Samurai Jack episode, The Princess and the Bounty Hunters.
A foolish samurai warrior wielding a magic sword stepped forth to oppose.
And this episode aired on November 12, 2003. So let's get into it. Samurai Jack. So Dave, why did we go over why you picked this series?
A little bit, yeah. Like I said, it's just my favorite. I love Samurai Jack. I watched it. I was a teenager at the time, in high school, so maybe a little bit too old for it. But I still liked it a lot, and I'm just a big Tatarsky fanboy. Actually, my fellow patron... tip of the cap to him for his good taste.
Aziz,
picked Dexter's Laboratory, another Tartakovsky.
That's right. And we should say this is a series created by Genndy Tartakovsky, who did create Dexter's Lab. And now, what is his full history? Can you give us more info about him?
Well, I noticed that his earliest listed credit was actually Batman the Animated Series, which is another, although he's like in-between artist, so it's probably not a major role.
Yeah, you can see that was like kind of a freelancer gig he could take on and just learn. But I mean, you can see the fingerprints of Batman the Animated Series in this too, like this in Samurai Jack. I mean, we covered some of his history a bit in Dexter, the Dexter episode, but briefly, he was part of a new generation of animators who got hired by Hanna-Barbera to work on new projects like Two Stupid Dogs, most of all, and then he graduated into the What a Cartoon program and to do a pilot like a lot of guys did. His was Dexter's and it sold, and so they made Dexter's Laboratory, but when Dexter ended after just 2 years, then he joined up on Powerpuff Girls with Craig McCracken and worked on that. And once that was over and it was time for him to pitch another series, he kind of was tired of comedy and he wanted to do action. He had been dying to do action. If you watch Powerpuff Girls and Dexter, you see all these moments like, well, now this just became an anime briefly. Like, you'll do a joke, but now it's an action anime.
Especially Powerpuff Girls. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, yes. And also, at this point in time, 2001, when the show launched, this is like a peak anime in America bubble. It's like the bubble was about to burst in terms of physical media, but anime was now accepted in some ways. You were not like a pariah for liking anime. That's what kids were watching, and now those kids are like, no, anime's fine. I watched it growing up, and it was like the perfect time to launch an anime-inspired show.
Yeah, like Dragon Ball Z was airing at that point, I think, on Toonami.
Everyone
I knew watched that. Like, that was just, you just watched it. Like, it was the cool thing to watch.
Yeah,
when you were,
1998 was like a real turning point for anime in America. It was like, oh man, anime's great, and I can watch it every day now.
Toonami started as just a simple action block that wasn't supposed to be introducing Americans to mainstream current anime. It was just like, well, we got Thundercats and Voltron, let's just air it and have Moltar host it. But then once they got Dragon Ball Z, and then also Gundam Wing, which gets kind of underestimated and overlooked sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, Gundam Wing was important too.
It made anime a huge deal, and so I think that also it made it a lot easier for Gennady to pitch a show that is more action and anime influence than anything he'd done before.
Yes, and as an elder millennial, I think Moltar is the true host of Toonami. I do not buy this nostalgia for the Steve Bloom voice spaceman. I'm like, no, that should be Moltar talking about Dragon Ball Z.
I don't know. I wonder if Gundam Wing holds up, because I just, when you brought that up, I totally forgot, but I was a huge fanboy of that, and now I'm like, I don't know if it's good.
I watched every episode endlessly, and it was also how I was introduced to the idea of yaoi. I did not know what yaoi was.
Oh, me too.
And I was like, oh, okay, when I search for Gundam Wing, these don't look like drawings from the show of these boys kissing without pants on.
Did I miss some episodes? What's happening here? So what is our history with the show? Well, I have an interesting story. I get to go first.
Well, so once Powerpuff Girls was over...
Oh, there's more about this guy, right?
Yeah, no, a quick thing about that. So once Powerpuff Girls was over, Gennady pitched the show, and this is how Mike Lazzo, who approved the show, tells the story of it. He said, hey, remember David Carradine in Kung Fu? Wasn't that cool? And I was like, yeah, that's really cool. That was literally the pitch.
Here's
the
two episodes, yeah.
Yes. I had that in my notes, by the way, so that's confirmed.
I mean, after Dexter and Powerpuff Girls, which are huge hits for Cartoon Network, it was probably like, let's just give him whatever he wants to do next.
Well, and in most stories of Mike Lazzo, as both the Cartoon Network executive and as the Adult Swim executive, he seems like a real chiller dude who's just like, yeah, whatever, man.
Yeah, like a very southern gentleman.
Yeah, Robot Chicken makes fun of him all the time, and that's his permission, it looks like. So.
I remember on Adventure Brothers commentary, one of his complaints of an episode was, is this super gay ass? Like, what does this mean?
Yeah. I do want to talk about, I want to go more into the history of the show, but I do want to ask everybody what their history with the show is. Like, where were you when this started?
They heavily promoted it so much that I was there day one. I was like, this movie event of the premiere of Samurai
That's right.
Jack,
yeah.
I am so excited for this. This is going to be the best show ever. And I watched it and I loved it, but I was 19 when it came out, so I also was, I was smart enough to know, like, oh boy, this is kind of indulgent or this is weird. I don't know. I didn't watch it as regularly as I did other shows, but I did love it from the moment I saw it.
How about you, Dave?
Yeah, so I'm only a little bit younger than you guys. So I was a freshman in high school, I think, when it started, and like 14, 15, I guess. And so I was really major into it. I was an unabashed nerd, so I didn't worry about my social standing or anything. So yeah, I just absolutely loved it. Like Henry said, they made a huge deal out of that movie premiere, which is actually, I think, the first three episodes
cut together. Yeah.
But yeah, they made a huge deal about that. They pumped up all the robot killing and oil splattering on Samurai Jack scenes, which is not blood, it's oil, kids, but...
Yeah. It wasn't a really... Yeah.
Sorry, he could do whatever he wanted to a robot. Living thing? Not so much.
Yeah. There are a lot of scenes where, like, he chops someone up that does not look robotic, and then the arm comes off, and you see, like, circuitry and stuff. And you're like,
okay, see, this is all right.
That's a nice workaround, I guess.
It reminds me of the foot soldiers from Ninja Turtles. It's like, they're all robots, you can chop their heads off and arms off and stuff like that.
That was in Batman as well, in the first Joker episode with Captain Clown. They were animating it, and then they're like, I wish Batman could just like hit him in the face with a crowbar. And they're like, well, if we make him a robot, Batman can. They're like, all right.
It kind of doesn't make sense why the Joker would have a giant robot henchman, but all right.
It really doesn't.
Yeah.
Joker sometimes gets like the tinker technology just so Batman can mess up robots.
My story about the show is that I was reviewing anime for the Jacksonville Film Journal. No, I did not live in Florida, but...
My local film journal. Yeah. You're writing for it for an Ohio. Wow.
Hey, I got paid in free anime. I didn't ask questions. And my editor was like, oh yeah, Cartoon Network sent me some tapes. Do you want them? I don't know what to do with them. And I was like, sure. And this is probably like before the launch of Adult Swim. It was definitely before the launch of Samurai Jack. They both launched around the same time, like actually like the same month. But one tape was all of the first Adult Swim shows. I got a screener for all the first Adult Swim shows. It was a VHS tape, so I'm incredibly old. And I was like, this shit is hilarious, but no one's going to watch this. This is just made for me. Like, this Aqua Teen thing, it's crazy. I love it, but who's going to watch this? I was wrong. And the other tape was Samurai Jack, the three episodes together. So I was like, I really like this, but man, the pacing on this is so slow. They're just letting this guy do whatever he wants. And it turns out they did. And I think a lot of the issue was they still had to make a kid's show. This is before Adult Swim was really doing its own thing with high-quality animation. And and because of that, they were making a kid's show for adults, and the kids were kind of tuning out. So I know the history of Samurai Jack is the ratings are always very bad. I remember hearing the ratings are terrible, the ratings are terrible. And in fact, they were so bad that Cartoon Network held on to the last four episodes for like a year and then burned them all off in one day.
I remember actually the end of season one, they did a show that's meant to be like, well, it could end with this one, so we have to do this a certain way. So I think that was actually like Aku's Tales or something, where he tells fairy tales.
But it
has this ending of like, well, maybe Jack will succeed in the future someday that we won't show. Because they were obviously very clear on like, we may not get a second season.
It was unfortunate the ratings were so low, but I think maybe one thing that kept it going was it won award after award. Oh, yeah. Like it was, it had eight Emmy awards in total, like for anime, and two Annie awards. Like it did so well that I think that kept it going a little longer. But yeah, it's a show like that couldn't have been on Adult Swim because it would not have had even half that budget.
That's
that
true.
Samurai Jack had to have.
Yeah, I mean, we should mention that I totally forgot about this, but there was a new season last year, 10 episodes made for Adult Swim, and I presume that they are more violent and they.
Yeah, I was going to mention when you brought that up. Yeah, like that's what the Adult Swim Samurai Jack looks like. Like one of the early plot points is that he kills a human for the first time. And
finally.
Yeah. Well, so yeah, just to quickly get through the history here, the Gennady brought on a lot of his Dexter pals to help him with it. That included Paul Rudish, Randy Myers, Robert Alvarez, and Rob Renzetti. The series is indulgently animated, and that means long stretches of silence. And also, the action could just happen and be cool for the sake of being cool. And also that it was animated with no line outlines.
It
was just paint on paint, which is just so great. And a lot of the show owes like so many influences of like Lone Wolf and Cub, Frank Miller. Like there's a Frank Miller comic called Ronin that just is this story. It's a pop punk future where a samurai from 1,000 years before shows up. That's in the Frank Miller comic Ronin. Jack Kirby, Akira Kurosawa. But also what I loved about the show is that the premise of a samurai brought into an alternate doomed future meant it could be anything any episode needed it to be.
Yeah, like this one is like a cabin in the woods in some snowy area. Yeah. But they could also just do anything and make any setting they wanted to. You're right.
Yeah, that's what I love about the premise of Samurai Jack is because before this show, I was actually at a time I remember thinking this distinctly of like episodic shows are terrible. I want to watch serialized stuff, you know, stuff that's a real story that continues throughout the whole season. It's actually this show that sort of changed my mind. That sounds more dramatic than it really is, but it's so cool that they could just do anything. Like there's a Wild West inspired episode. There's like a mafia inspired episode.
There's really no linearity to it either. Like any episode could take place at a certain time, and there's a certain interestingness to the unending quest of Jack that he's always like, well, maybe now I'll find a way to get back to my time in this town. Nope.
Yeah, that's the one consistent.
he
never make it back
every time.
I actually think that's one of the reasons why I didn't watch the show at the time. I think I have a more open mind now, but when I was 19 and reviewing anime, I was like, no, anime is the best. And you're just making your own fake anime, and it's not even like serialized. It's all very episodic. Why would you do this? So I was just like, I don't need Samurai Jack. I mean, I liked the first three episodes, but again, I was like a much bigger anime fan than I am now. I still like anime, but I was like, no, anime is the only way to do things.
It is the way of the
life. You fools.
you were a weeaboo before we really had the term.
That's true.
So Samurai Jack, he's voiced by Phil LaMarr, who's amazing. Like, he's always great that you're not going to hear him in this episode of a podcast.
No, Phil LaMarr was busy.
And also not featured in this episode, but the greatest is Mako as Aku.
Yeah, is he? He's deceased now,
oh, yes,
correct?
The late, great Mako as Aku. And he's playing clip number one, if you could. That is some great Aku from the intro.
Before the final blow was struck, I tore open a portal in time and flung him into the future, where my evil is law. Now the fool seeks to return to the past and undo the future that is Aku.
Back in the past, Samurai Jack.
Yeah, props to them for actually getting an Asian actor. I mean, I don't know what you want to say about casting a black actor as an Asian character. I'm sure it's nothing really to get mad about, but it's just like they didn't just get a white guy doing an Asian voice.
Yeah, and Phil Lamar does
step
it
up, I guess.
Well and respectfully.
I don't think he's doing like an accent either. He speaks very haltingly, you know. Yes.
It sounds like his Justice League, the John Stewart voice.
Oh, a little John Stewart, though more like old-timey because he is an old-timey guy too. What I also love about Jack is that he, in the premiere episode, you get to see he is Batman. Like his family is killed, his father is killed, and then he goes on a trip of learning to be the best at everything from the best in the world, which those are some of my favorite Batman animated series and comics where it's like Bruce Wayne on the road learning how to be a magician, learning how to be a ninja.
Really on the same page, because in my notes I have he does the Batman training thing.
Totally.
Yeah, for sure.
We are minds very alike here. And so, yeah, the series ended in 2004. They even talk about in interviews of like, we didn't even have time to think about maybe doing a last episode because they overlapped production with Clone Wars, Clone Wars.
I wanted to bring that up when you guys were talking about Dexter's Laboratory. You mentioned the other things he's done. Symbionic Titan is a good one, a very good one. But Clone Wars is actually almost, it's tough to choose between Samurai Jack or Clone Wars as my favorite Tartosky thing.
So wait, the Tartosky's one is called Clone Wars and the other one is called The Clone Wars? Is that how it works?
Okay. I say 2003. Tartosky's Clone Wars 2003.
That's a better way to do it because like it's missing the article, but like is that the one that's canon now? Or like,
no,
one of them
is not canon.
The CGI one.
The CGI one that listeners heard last week.
Yes.
That was recently.
I'm sure I asked that on that podcast. Yes. I'm just confused. Like, of all the things to be canon, why would you just choose that one of two Clone
Wars
things?
Well, that one is more beloved by Lucas.
Yeah.
Lucas, and then it was still airing at the time Disney blew up the canon. So they're like, well, if we're still going to be airing this, we can't say it's not canon.
That's true.
So.
Turn your way, children.
Well, also, it depicts events that take place between episodes 2 and 3 of Star Wars. So the events still happen, basically.
Yeah.
The show is technically not canon, but those events still happen.
They may as well. But Gennady, his team on Clone Wars, like, they learned so much about how to do action even better than ever on Samurai Jack.
Yeah.
Like, it's so snappy and fast. And also, it was interesting to see them do a Star Wars show because, like, multiple, not this one, though actually a little, actually no, this one too. Star Wars is such an influence on Samurai Jack. Like, these bounty hunters are Star Wars bounty hunters.
I have fucking Darth Vader's in this episode. Like a blue Darth Vader.
Star Wars itself is inspired by old samurai films. And,
yeah,
that's true.
So
they're pulling from the same thing.
Who's ripping who off, I ask.
And so after Clone Wars, though, Gennady, for years in interviews, people be like, so what's happening with Samurai Jack? He never ended this. Did he go back to his time? He'd be like, we're trying to make a movie. I'm trying to make a movie. Wouldn't go anywhere. He also was trying to make a Popeye movie. That never went anywhere. The only movies he could get to make were Hotel Transylvania movies.
I'm sure those are fine.
Better than you'd think.
There were like two different kinds of spooky Halloween CGI movies, Hotel Transylvania and one other one.
Monsters Attack or something?
I don't know. I just get them confused. They're probably nothing alike.
It's the better one.
Okay.
But you wouldn't watch it because you're like, oh, Dracula's voiced by Adam Sandler. No, thank you.
Yeah, that's kind of a turnoff.
So after back and forth of Gennady trying to do Samurai Jack, working at Sony Pictures, coming back to Warner to try to make something, going back to Sony, 2016 into 2017, finally Adult Swim gives him the money to make a new season of Samurai Jack intentionally to be the end. And Gennady isn't like other people, just like, yeah, I'll executive produce, do whatever. He fucking worked his ass off on the show's director. Like, it's his show.
He didn't just rubber stamp it. And I was actually looking, so I didn't have the ratings for the original series. I couldn't find those, but I knew they were low. But all the time I just was reading, the ratings are so bad. The ratings for the reboot were like over a million people. Over a million people on a cable station is a lot.
Well, see, yeah, this also adjusted, right? Because the ratings in 2002 or whatever, a little bit different.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm sure it was like only 3 million people watched this.
But getting a million people on Adult Swim in 2017 is pretty good.
It is.
But also I think people tuned in because they had been waiting. They grew up with the show. They've been waiting 13 years for any kind of finality.
I was a big Samurai Jack fan, so like every year, you know the internet works with clickbait type stuff that every year, like, the movie's happening, they're getting serious about it, they're talking about it now, and every year, every other year, they bring that up, and it's like, at some point, you just give up, like, okay, I get it, like, six straight years, it's not gonna happen, I got it.
Was that the live-action movie? I read, while I was reading up on this, I read that there were plans to make a live-action movie. There were plans to make a live-action movie of everything, by the way, but for this, there were plans, but I guess they fell through.
Wait, I think, at least in my recollection, is more the animated movie, but I'm sure there was a live-action thing,
too. Oh, yeah, I mean, it lends itself, honestly, it should be a live-action movie. Everybody makes movies that, but now it would feel like Ghost in the Shell was when it came out. It's like, well, there's so many movies like this already that it just feels like a ripoff of the things that influenced.
That's for sure.
And the final season, it was very different in that, like you said, blood, death, M rating, or TV, MA, whatever.
Yeah.
And it was linear, too. Chapters followed into each other, and it told a story of farther into the future. Aku still reigns supreme. Jack has no time portals left. He has lost all hope. His sword is gone, too. And it is about him finding his way back to the Jack we love. And there is, I won't spoil it if you haven't seen it, there is finality to it. Like, the way it ends, they don't...
Yeah.
That can just be the period on the end of the sentence.
The one thing I really appreciate about that season five, I guess I'd call it, is it's very aimed at fans of the show like me. Like, it's not for kids, you know. You wouldn't show that to, like, a 6 or 8 year old. Like, you might show the original Samurai
Jack. It was an Adult Swim show, not a Cartoon Network show, right?
Yeah.
The reboot.
But yeah, it was very explicitly aimed at, like, okay, for people who were fans of the show back in the day, like, we're getting an ending finally. You know, it's 10 episodes. We're going to end it. There's no ambiguity. There's no, like, the further adventures of Samurai. It ends, you know.
And yes, Mako was gone, but he also was a voice on Avatar The Last Airbender, and he had passed away on that during production. And on that show, they hired a voice actor named Greg Baldwin to do his character, and he does a very good facsimile of Mako, and that's who they hired to do Aku as well. And it's good, like, if you have to accept, like, well, the other guy's dead. You're not getting him.
We just needed a sound alike, basically.
Tells us of a mighty warrior named Samurai Jack. He comes from a distant age, but was thrust forward through time by the deceitful Aku. Jack wanders the strange lands alone, searching for a way home, helping those who need him along the way. Though Aku tries to destroy him and break his spirit, Jack never loses hope. For one day he knows he will find a way to return home and release the world from Aku's evil grip. Watch Samurai Jack on Cartoon Network.
That's pretty much now. Samurai Jack is finished, but that takes us back to this episode, and I really love this one. I just love that this episode shows how flexible the show of Samurai Jack was, and also when you look at the episode list, the next episode after this is a completely different style of episode. It is a Scotsman two-parter with John DiMaggio's crazy Scotsman.
That one I do love and remember, but I noticed, before we get into the episode itself, I did notice, like, the repetition they play with in these episodes. I watched a few others, actually, and it's just like, we're going to do this setup for this character, and we're going to do the same setup for the rest of the characters in the show. And then when they tell their stories, they each have the same setups for their stories. Like, there's a lot of, like, repeating the same stuff with different characters. They like that idea a lot. And I feel like that's pretty brave and confident because, you know, you're asking people to put up with the same thing over and over with, like, little tweaks to it.
Yeah,
I think you talked about this also in the Dexter's Laboratory episode. But yeah, you have long stretches of silence, like, in this episode. And it's something that, you know, as you mentioned, with kids' shows, you tend to have, like, just, you know, gobbledygook all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, clowns jumping around.
Speaking of anime, like in the Dragon Ball Z, the classic dub we all remember, the directive was like, there must be music playing every second. Every second there needs to be music or sound effects or our kid will change the channel.
Yeah.
So, like,
yeah.
Just droning keyboards in the background.
We'll see that in this episode where I think there's, I didn't time it exactly, but I think it's like 3 or 4 minutes of just silence except for like a occasional sound effect. Of
yeah, like a water dripping. Yeah. Which is a great device. We'll get into that later.
And but that's hardly alone on the show. That's how, when I watched that premiere movie, his origin sequence of training, there's no dialogue for minutes at a time. And then it ends. That episode, the premiere is so weird because also the first people he helps in the future are basically like two stupid dogs characters. They're Hanna-Barbera cartoon
you
dogs.
You are so right about that, yeah.
And I think that's them showing you, like, anybody can live in this future. Like, this can be anything. And then he spends it with, like, the end of the show with like a 10-minute fight of him just cutting up the same bug robot for so long in just silence. And I love that.
Yeah. Again, good confidence on Tartakovsky's part. So do you want to get into the episode itself?
Yeah.
So we start off with, again, like I said before, there's a lot of repetition in good ways in that we see a barber cutting someone's hair and he's like giving you the introduction to all the bounty hunters we'll see later in the episode. So here's the first part of that.
You are in good hands with Tonino, cause I'm the best. I've been cutting hair all of my life. No matter how big or small, I cut them all. Mamma mia! It's Chuchunga, the Aboriginal bounty hunter. His blowgun has captured the most elusive prey, a tattooed terror. What is he doing this far north?
And every time he sees a new bounty hunter, he, like, slips with the razor and shaves off a new strip of hair, and the person's hair, we'll meet them later.
Oh, I love Panino. Like, he is such a great the Italian stereotype, a barber from the older country. is, like, do you watch BoJack Horseman, Dave?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, in one of the recent seasons, they have a very stereotypical Italian chef who works at his restaurant.
Oh,
just like, my family, we work so hard. And then when he quits, he just is like, and you're not gonna find another Italian stereotype like me, because we don't immigrate to America as much anymore.
Henry's using his hands a lot when he's talking, by the way.
He's doing the Italian stereotype hand, too.
I meant to say, this episode directed by Robert Alvarez and Gennady Tartakovsky, but also written / storyboarded by Brian Andrews and Brian Larson. One of those guys was the co-creator of the
Symbiotic Titan.
Brian Andrews, I think, right? Because he's on everything with Gennady. Gennady, I should say.
It's also really hard to watch this episode and now not think of Hateful Eight, because...
You are so right. I thought of that. Yeah, man.
But I think what happened... I wouldn't even say Tarantino's ripping off this. I think they're both just pulling from the same love of spaghetti westerns. Like, there's... When I search for, oh, what spaghetti western could this be? There were like five that came up that, like, it's just a love of spaghetti westerns of the 60s.
But it's a nice little bit of trying to establish who these people are, because it's important later, all these bounty hunters. Nope. So you have like this typical barber who you wouldn't expect to have special knowledge, but of course he goes, oh, these are all these famous bounty hunters, you know.
It's such a great trick. Like, this show is so smart in exposition in this, because you just invent this character of Panino so you don't need to have the bounty hunters describe themselves to you.
Yeah.
And instead you can confirm how cool they are because Panino, who sees everything and he knows so much, he can tell you about all of them.
And he's also, it's exposition, but it's also funny because a funny character is delivering it. And you know they're bounty hunters, but you don't know who they're after, but you should probably know by watching the show. But in case you don't, there's like a wanted poster for Jack in the barber's barbershop.
It gets revealed more and more each time. I even, like, there's that, and I just love, when you think about it, they are walking forward towards the sign that is Jack. It shows you are going towards Jack. Like,
that's
the
nice
way your eyes are just pulled. It's beautiful.
And also, I just love Tartakovsky's, or the Samurai Jacks, I should say, not just only him, the art style. Just like how, like, kind of goofy but somewhat realistic characters they look, you know, like the barber himself has like little weird like ears, like little crosses in them.
Yeah, in a way, this episode reminds me of playing tabletop RPGs, because everybody's like, well, I'm this type of badass. Well, I'm this type of badass. And just this, the way he describes him too is how you'd say, oh, well, I made a level blah, 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 whatever, which is in an episode of Dexter's Lab as well, the D&D episode. And I love the design of Jujunga. When you see each of the five bounty hunters, you see the range of bodies and design that Samurai Jack can indulge in as well.
Mm-hmm. And here's more of the barber.
Oh, My. You're...
Boris, biggest, baddest bounty hunter of all.
I just love his music.
He's huge. Also, Boris was the guy who was getting his hair cut horribly by the barber.
Doesn't even seem to mind.
Yeah. I just want to throw out there. So Boris is obviously like the comic relief of the bounty hunter crew.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't. It may not mean anything at all, but I just want to point out that Gennady, first of all, is Russo-American.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And also his dad's name is Boris. So read into that what you will. Boris is a common Russian name. But
and Boris's hat is like an Eastern Orthodox shirt, just like roof, like the Hershey's Kiss kind of thing.
He looks more like Hunnic, like Hun, than actual Russian, but whatever.
I love his like beak of a nose too. Like it's just so.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, we also get to see the gentleman. I just love the dangerous Southern dandy. That's such a great character.
And we hear his name, but it's sort of mangled by the accent, so I could never pick out his name. I tried to listen into it. It's like that's a blah blah blah. He's a this guy. And I was like, oh, I can't understand what you're saying, dude.
All the rest they just refer to him as the gentleman.
Yeah.
And he and then there's I and Am, which I mean, let's talk about. Adam, like they, I and Am are Siamese cat twin characters. Their voice, Boris, I and Am, and Jojunga are voiced by Kevin Michael Richardson, who fucking rules. Like, I love it. I got to interview him once at a con. Super nice guy. Nicest guy in the world. He's currently the voice of Shredder, among a million other voices. If you watch American Dad and love the crazy principal who just does anything, that's Kevin Michael Richardson. But the characters of I and Am, they, I guess you could call them problematic. I mean, they are Asian stereotypes, but I think what's deeper and weirder to them is that they are inspired by an old Disney problematic cartoon, and then they're in, and then they're a takeoff on that, right, Dave? I see.
Yeah, I was gonna say I saw that too. I don't know if they're actually based off them or not, but there are Siamese cat twins in Lady and the Tramp.
I have some proof a little later. I think
I would say the Siamese twins are based off of racism, Siamese cats, and not Disney. I mean, it was not Disney to invent that stereotype, but I will say that I picked up on that too. And if you remove the ears from those I and Am characters, you're like, that should not be on TV. Because it's like down to even having like almost buck teeth, which is another part of the Asian stereotype thingy. That's like, oh, you guys, like I know what you're trying to do, but oof.
Yeah, though they are fun. Removed from the that, they're fun characters.
They at least didn't do the accent too terribly.
Yeah, that is true. Like I got to say, there were these people making the show were not racist or anything. No. There's like that's a cool design, but they didn't really think beyond that. Yeah. You know, and
you mentioned the buck teeth. They also have that little mustache,
like the Fu Manchu.
Thank you. I couldn't think of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we also get to see the mysterious unknown bounty hunter who pretty much is Darth Vader. But, well, it's Darth Vader, but in a Boba Fett style.
Yeah.
But then we'll have a Samus Aran style reveal of like, it's a girl. I would love to see Boris versus the Scotsman, though.
Oh, yeah.
Though clearly if the Scotsman is the equal, like he is an equal to Jack, then obviously he'd beat Boris.
It'd be funny, but there's no doubt who the winner would be.
At first I thought he was a Boris Badenoff reference, but then I watched some Boris Badenoff clips. So I was like, not really. It's just the Russian accent.
So here's all the bounty hunters meeting.
It seems there is a problem you cannot deny. We are all here for the same samurai.
Indeed we are, but I see no reason to discuss this in the most frigid of temperatures. I suggest that we confer on this delicate matter inside this nearby vacant structure.
Da, it is cold!
Hmm.
Hmm.
Hmm. Hmm. Hmm. Hmm.
Just cutting back between all of them nodding in agreement. I kind of wanted that to go on longer. I'm like, keep it coming. I like
this. They still have a 4-minute sequence of silence to do, so they're probably running out of time to.
That's true. It's true. There's more. There's so many like shot, reverse shot, this person's eyes, that person's eyes in this episode a bunch of times. It's great.
I was going to mention, talking about possible influences earlier. I don't know how, again, this is one of those, I wouldn't confirm it, but it was mentioned when I was trying to do research on this. Someone thought that the gentleman might be inspired by Doc Holliday specifically from Tombstone.
Huh.
And I looked at clips of him. At least visually, it matches. I don't know about personality, but visually, they have the same, facial hair and everything.
I think so. I see a bit of that there, though. I like that his specialty is knives. None of them have a gun, which I think might have helped him a little more, though. As the gentleman will say later, like, his knives go faster than any bullet. So.
I'm sure that's true.
Yes.
They do have guns in the shows. So it's not like it was a censorship thing.
That's true, yeah.
These guys, they're better than guns.
Yeah,
just
exactly.
Like a Jedi. A Jedi doesn't need those crude weapons.
Well, it's also very anime, because Japanese RPGs, like, bullets are worthless. You don't.
Yeah.
Something like Persona.
Yeah.
If I could shoot you and end this fight, then that's pretty boring. So we have to say bullets are useless.
Yeah.
And so once they get in there, then it starts the story section of the episode, which this is just an amazing sequence in their own because each one is animated differently.
Yeah,
they're like a short film within the show.
With different music, too. Mm-hmm. And I like how, again, with the repetition, it's like whenever one of the bounty hunters tells their plan, the screen is split up into four sections, and it happens four times.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like that. So here's the Aborigines plan.
My flute is really a blowgun with darts dipped in the most lethal of poisons. This bounty will be mine.
You will fail. Your plan is flawed.
How? It has never failed me before. It cannot be defeated.
The samurai's senses are too acute. He will hear you, take a breath before you fire, and easily avoid your dart completely. You wouldn't stand a chance.
So yes, after every plan is told, the Darth Vader stand-in will say, no, this is why your plan will fail.
He's very like snippily sitting above them in judgment.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, but it wouldn't work.
And each plan they do, like we did the Jujungas plan there, it's kind of drawn in the art style of their ethnicity or
Aboriginal art. Yeah.
It fits their background in both. And just the way, like, they get to show him kill Jack in a fantasy sequence and just how his eyes turn into, like, spirals and then they shut. It's so great. And though he calls it a flute, it's a didgeridoo.
I'd love to say that, yeah. But I wonder if that was a mistake or if they just thought, like, will kids be confused by didgeridoo? We'll just call it a flute.
Maybe.
That could have been a note of like, well, kids don't know what a didgeridoo is.
Yeah, kids are, you know, internationally knowledgeable.
Kids need to learn.
Also, and then there's a commercial break right after that one when the gentleman's about to tell his story, but they work so well, like, an act break could be inserted anywhere, but also you can remove these commercial breaks, and it's just a great 20-minute short film, really.
So here is the gentleman's plan.
Now, I'm not one to brag, but I must say that my blades fly faster than any bullet. He will not be able to escape them. I assure you, indeed, this bounty will be mine.
It is definitely the end for you.
Pardon me?
He is too disciplined to fall for your tricks. Your decoy alone is not strong enough.
His story was told like via almost a silent film.
Like a silent film with a flicker on it. And also, I love the way it slows down as the two knives are about to hit Jack. I'm just like, look, we can't show up stabbed.
Yeah.
We'll get up to the very moment it would have hit.
I was thinking of that while watching this. Are they going to show him getting stabbed with two knives? Oh, no, they're not. But it's inferred, at least. The violence is inferred.
Well, I thought this was the best place to put this. I was going to say, there was actually an episode of like Duck Dodgers that starred at Gennady Tartakovsky guest star. And they had a joke about how he can only chop up robots. And they're like, he holds a sword to Tartakovsky, goes, I'm going to chop you up. I don't know what the exact line is. But then Tartakovsky goes, not with a Y7 rating you are. So this was the thing they were acutely aware of.
That's pretty great.
Man, I didn't see that episode. I watched one episode that was particularly meta where Duck Dodgers / Daffy gets a Green Lantern ring and joins the Green Lantern Corps.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one, actually.
And Hal is voiced by Kevin Smith in that one.
Oh, that makes perfect sense.
So then we get to the I and Am story, which, okay, so I have a clip. We're going to play it after this clip. But listen to the music in the background as I and Am tell their story, guys.
Mm. Okay, let's do it.
As the samurai enters the town, we will wait for the final showdown. Concealed we will be. Our surprise he will never see. I will attack from the rear. And Anne from the sun will appear. A thousand bombs will fall from the sky. In his confusion, the samurai will surely die.
You're on the right track, but the two of you can never defeat Jack. Jack is cunning and hard to restrain. By leaving him a sword, he stays in the game.
I forgot those. Are all those dialogue lines rhymed?
The I and Am are rhymed.
I am, yeah.
Oh, so.
And the princess replies in a rhyme as well.
She does it's kind of the same thing for the gentleman. She goes, you know, because it ends the. his little short film thing ends with the end. He goes, it's definitely the end for you.
Yes,
like,
yes.
She tries to be a little clever.
That's
about
cool.
It.
Okay, so here is the clip we want to play.
Yes, from Lady and the Tramp.
Do you hear what I hear? A baby cry. Were we finding baby? There are milk nearby. If we look in baby buggy, there could be plenty milk for you. And also some for me.
All right.
Those scheming so-and-sos.
They're telling their scheme, which I and Am did, but also just that dun-dun-dun, the drum beat, like yeah. The background music and drum beat is straight from Lady and the Tramp.
So in Lady and the Tramp, are they C and Am, though? Their names, I mean, in Lady
and
the Tramp.
Oh, I forget the Siamese cat's names.
I have it as S-I and Am. C-I, C-N-M?
Oh, C and Am, that makes sense.
I thought they would be more deeply offensive than that.
Well, I mean, they're from Siam, which is like, you have to be 100 to remember that's the name of the place. Or a musical theater fan of The King and I. Yeah, I mean, those characters are racist. Like,
they're not great.
Disney was like, you think we're racist? Check out the Aristocats, man. Yes. We're going to double down on this.
Not that it excuses it, but it's worth pointing out Lady and the Tramp was, I think, 1955?
Yeah.
Which, again, doesn't make it okay.
No,
but
no,
it's
no,
like,
no. Well, I have also I'm attached to those characters in a way I shouldn't be, because I watched Lady and the Tramp as a little kid during one of the re-releases, or we had a VHS of it. Like, when I was like preschool, because then I remember, like, when my mom like would bathe me, she would sing the song of it was one of my earliest memories of hearing that song, and she would sing the maybe some for you and also some for me, like, and it's so,
well, Henry, your mom is a monster.
I know,
very, very problematic.
I'm tweeting about this right now, hashtag Henry Gates.
But I mean that shows you how in our house, it was innocent at the time. It was not the, but I mean,
just not not woke enough. Henry's mom, not woke enough.
Yeah, you know. And also, it had the feeling of like, well, if it's in a Disney cartoon, it couldn't be offensive to anyone.
It's all wholesome. Yeah. So up next, we have Boris's plan.
He will attack his sword. He breaks against my belly. Then I break him. Break him! Break him! Break him! That's how Boris gets the bounty! Any questions?
Have you always been this stupid?
Yes!
You've underestimated your opponent. You have no idea what you're up against.
One thing we should point out, though, I just realized this entire episode so far is like mostly characters explaining things. Like, the barber's explaining who people are, and the characters are explaining what they're going to do, but they managed to make it interesting.
It's a very visual thing. Like, there's two parts of this episode I really love, and one of them is this part here where they have each of the different art styles for each of the bounty hunters. I don't know, it tickles something inside me. I like that so much.
Yeah, they're getting to play around already within a show that is so flexible in storytelling that you could have Jack not even appear for now 12 minutes into the episode, but also so flexible. It's like, oh, and when these characters tell their stories, we're going to animate that differently within the show. But my favorite of the design style is Ian Am's story. Like, it's the brush strokes, just the brush strokes of black against white.
Yeah.
It's lovely.
Sumier? Is that what you call it? I thought it was.
Sure.
Let's just say I'm right.
It might be the paper. I'm not sure what to draw on.
I just know people would say that a lot when Okami came out, so I took that as gospel.
Okay. You might be right. Yeah.
It's Sumie in my superior Japanese games. Of course I know what this is.
It is Okami. It's from the same style of Okami, which is also kind of... I and Am are more Chinese.
But whatever. They can both use brushes.
Well,
it's fine.
Shamefully, when I didn't think of Okami, I thought of... There's a move in One Piece.
Oh, yes, that's right.
It stands for turning to paper.
It's better than everything, Henry. But Boris's plan was animated like a child's drawing, which I liked.
Yeah, that was great, too.
A super fluid, like, crayon illustration of what he's going to do.
I love that his plan is just like, well, his unbreakable sword will break against me. Like, that's my plan.
And then I will just smash him.
In the drawing, too, like I said, it's crayon and, like, poorly. Like, it's not colored in all the way. Like,
it's not colored inside the lines.
Poorly. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. It takes real skill to draw that badly. And so then we get the Samus Aran style reveal of Princess Mira.
I have more power and skill than all of you.
It seems her tongue bites as hard as her stick.
But even I cannot defeat the samurai on my own.
What's that?
The only way to defeat him is to join forces and attack him together, all at once.
A wise and powerful plan this would be.
But who is the one to claim the bounty?
I am.
No, woman will.
Silence! I must claim this bounty. But not for the money. For freedom. The freedom of my people and my kingdom.
So Aku has enslaved her entire kingdom. Her plan is to bring Jack to Aku, and then she will pay the rest of the bounty hunters 10 times the bounty of the Samurai.
I was going to mention right before this clip, she kind of serves Boris.
Yeah, that's right.
Her and Boris are great as a pair. Like, her beating up, Boris is like, I hate women, and then she beats him up. It's just a great
He charges at her, and then he kind of like, she kind of sidesteps him and like flips him over, and the bounty hunters are all impressed with that. Mm-hmm. Then he gets back up again, and she just punches him in the face.
Yeah. I also like that the gentleman asked Jujunga, like, oh, is she the one who did the thing on the planet? Yes.
It's very nice. It's a very nice lampshade of, like, we don't want to explain what she actually did, but we need to establish her as, you know, really good. So.
I also love this bit here. As a viewer, this is meant to make you, if you're watching the show Samurai Jack, you're rooting for Jack to live and defeat his enemies. And you would be up until this point, too, because, like, yeah, it's a bunch of bounty hunters who, Jack has fought his share of bounty hunters to this point in the show too, but then when you find out no, Princess Mira, her life sucks, like she her kingdom is doomed, they are enslaved, like she wants to free them, you are sort of rooting for her a little bit and against Jack.
Yeah, the rest of the bounty hunters have selfish reasons to want to get Jack, just money, but
they
she has
money.
A more virtuous reason to turn Jack into
and
Aku.
And up to this point in the show too, Jack's actually, even though Aku kind of rules as a rule everything kind of thing going on, Jack has freed kingdoms up to this point.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he helps out the dog people in the first episode, like you mentioned earlier. There's some sea people he freed. Like, it's all over the place. So there's a different variation of this episode where, like, they meet up and go, oh, we should be friends, and then we should go rescue your kingdom from Aku. And, of course, that's not what's going
to
happen.
Yeah. For all her planning and knowing what's a good plan, she should have been listening to herself, too, of just like, you are also underestimating Jack.
Yes.
It's worth pointing out also up to this point that Jack has never had a problem in a fight, basically. Like, 99% of the time he wins his fights. Mm-hmm. Like, his problem or his conflict in most episodes is not, like, not strong enough. Like, that's not an issue for him.
That's true. Yeah, he's a superhuman. So here is everybody agreeing with the princess.
Aku has enslaved my nation for many years, plundering our wealth and resources. I will collect this bounty, and for payment, I will ask for my people to be freed and my kingdom restored. In return for your help, I will pay you the sum of the bounty, plus tenfold!
My, my.
That is much money.
Her land has priceless resources.
Priceless?
So it seems.
It seems to me that Boris does agree.
Da, much money, please.
You'll get it.
I better.
You will.
I better.
You will.
Okay, what is it?
This is what we'll do.
And that's another act break.
A great commercial break.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really love Boris in this episode because he does add some needed comic relief, but also I just kind of like how he's kind of headstrong. Like, it's like everyone else can see, they're like, oh yeah, this princess will kick her ass. But he's like, no, I can do this. I'm better. I can come up with a better plan. I got all this.
Even up to the end, he's doubting her.
Yeah.
And not wanting to be bossed around by a woman.
And that commercial break is great because when it comes back, so if you just watch, say, like, this is the plan, you're waiting to hear what the plan is. When it comes back, it's not animated in a different style like the other plans were. So you think you're just seeing the successful execution of her plan.
I never thought of
that. She has killed Samurai Jack.
Well, let's hear the plan.
This is the plan.
Well, it certainly seems to be a wise and prudent plan, my dear.
It is good. Hey, plan okay. The goddess would have had a better plan.
Good. Let's get to work.
That's great. Yeah, again, I love how they make you wait. And yeah,
I kept that in there just so listeners can really feel like that's how long they make you wait on that show.
I mean, there's an even longer waiting scene coming up. But yeah, like, her plan is basically they all work together. It all starts off with Am, I believe, stealing the sword, and they all rush in basically, and then I will drop bombs.
It's a combo of all their plans.
Yeah,
and but you just get to see it in action. And that's also what I love. The service of this entire episode to explain all their plans in detail, then to show them to you again, working in concert. concert to let you know this is how much they plan, so that then when the action finally happens, you see, you know their plan so well that you can see how perfectly they fall apart facing Jack.
Yeah, like, I love how meticulous this show gets with its storytelling. It's like, we're going to show you the characters digging the holes they're going to hide in. Mm-hmm. Like, they really want to, like, show you, like, every step of the plan here, every step of their scheme.
This episode in particular, but Samurai Jack in general, they really do a great job of, like, building up to, like, a huge climax. But that build-up will take a while. They really spend their time on it. Like, with the clip you just had, too, with that silence, it just cuts back and forth between Boris and the princess. And you see the princess get progressively angry and angrier with her face scrunches up more and more.
Yeah, the close-up gets more intense. I'm like, how much can they go back and forth?
And then he's like, okay, I do.
It kind of reminds me of all in, like, Chuck Jones' cartoon, where they'd have constant close-ups of eyes, and then they'd just draw more and more wrinkles on them.
And, like, eye veins.
Yes. Yeah, just the subtle facial acting between Boris and Mira is so great. And also, Mira is really smart. Like, she uses I and Am's psychic link perfectly. Like, you will report to us from there, but in a way that Jack can't possibly hear. There's no way he'd know. Oh, God. And also the glaring at Boris, like, as they're digging is just so great. And it kills time. It's real good.
Yeah, I'm not sure it was in that clip, but she smacks him in the head at one point, and he's just like, hey, get to digging.
Yeah, yeah. She just slaps him. So here's more of them butting heads.
I hate taking orders from women. Hey, you, country boy man, how about you and me team up and collect bounty, no?
The gentleman never goes back on his word. Besides, our present course of action is, in fact, the most lucrative for all parties involved. You must be crazy, sir.
Simple answer, da or no?
That's when he gets slapped.
I was a little ahead of there.
Keep digging!
So after this, what I really like about this episode and the upcoming scene is that the next scene, I believe, is them just all waiting underground. And what the device that sort of keeps track of time, it's sort of the ticking clock, is that water droplet. Mm-hmm. And that pays off in a very interesting way after their attack on Jack. Just mm-hmm. the way – what that signifies is very important later. But I love just the cutting to the water drop and then back underground to people waiting. It's very, very super tense. Like, you're just waiting for something to happen.
Well, they establish that water drop when they're just hanging out for Jack to come up, and then the princess is showing her immense skill again by cutting the water droplet in half each time it drops off
and
the
immediately
icicle.
Getting her sword back in its sheath. Like, you, as a viewer too, like the bounty hunters, like, she might be as good as Jack. She might be really good. And also that the show can just take the time, like, Nash is them hanging around. Like, they could have cut to Jack arriving whenever they felt like it.
Yeah.
It's kind of them as the creators looking to the audience of, we're gonna make you wait. Like, we could get to this fight right now, but we're gonna make you wait.
And they really want to build up that Jack might actually have a problem with them. Because like, most of his fights, he doesn't have much of a problem unless there's like a million of them or something. Like, he's not challenged too often in an actual fight. So they're trying to build up, like, maybe she could take him one-on-one, maybe. Mm-hmm.
I think they do a great job of, like, making you feel the same tension the characters do, because it's like, you want the thing to just happen, but they're sitting around and waiting. They're sitting in hiding and waiting. Like them, you just want to get this thing over with or see what happens. But I really felt the tension again. But that bicycle, it was a way to show off Mira's strength, but also a way to sort of serve as a ticking clock in the background to make things more. It felt like nothing is taken for granted in these shows, I think.
Not a wasted effort in it. And then once you're like, you're even seeing, like, I is sleeping, and you're just like, well, what's going to happen here? And then when once you finally get the message, like, he's coming, it's like, whoa, finally. This is the last audio.
But I do kind of like the bounty hunters hanging out too a little bit, because it does show, like, they're pretty relaxed considering they're going up against, like, a really famous guy here. Mm. Like, in universe, Samurai Jack has a, you know, bajillion-dollar bounty or whatever.
By season four, everybody in that world should be like, oh, shit, Samurai Jack.
It says something about them too, that they're very relaxed. They're just hanging out. You know, the gentleman throws a knife through a leaf to show how great his throwing ability is. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Jujunga plays his Dirichidu or flute.
Yes.
You know, M's just sleeping. Like, it's not a big deal to them until, you know, it's go time. Like, they're pros is what kind of comes across.
I think their confidence comes from the fact that Mira talks a good game, but also there are five of them. So they figure, like, he could be strong, but there's five of us.
Yeah, no way. So,
it'll never work out for him.
Yeah. So here's a clip where Jack is on his way.
He's coming. He's coming.
Positions!
Yes. So again, I'm feeling that tension because that sword slashing just so repetitive, but it's just there to like, God, do something. Something needs to happen.
Well, cutting a water droplet so impresses all the rest of them and lets you again know like she's really good. This is, and just hearing the he's coming like sound like oh shit, it's happening.
They do they do all that, and then you wait for like 3 minutes.
you wait so long. I love the care in which they show them going to their positions while I brushes away their footprints to hide it. There's no way he'd know, right?
They didn't need to show that or even think of that, but that was really clever. Like they didn't even talk about that part of the plan either. Just something that's like, of course we'll cover up our tracks.
We're professionals.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a sign of like these guys are good. They're a step above the usual bounty hunters that Jack's mauling most of the time.
Just he meets a lot of like drunk losers in bars, and then he's just like, I don't want any trouble, and then he has to hack them up.
Yeah.
And this is just Jack is, you've been waiting for Jack this whole time, and you think like, oh, well, now he's here. And it's still a couple minutes, and you're just living, you're really inside of the princess's mind, the way she's like just glaring intensely, like, come on, my people, show up already.
Yeah, they cut to each one in the little hidey holes.
Yeah.
they dug out holes, and they had a little wooden cover, I guess, something like that. And then they cut to each one just like, you know, tensing up, knowing that he's coming soon. But
while the water is dripping in the background.
Yeah, exactly. Like you were saying, that's a way to keeping time. Because it also, that plays into their final confrontation. It shows you how long or short that was.
So after making you wait that long, it is over 19 minutes into the episode that Jack appears over the horizon. He is silent. He is not doing anything. You're not from Jack's viewpoint like you are most episodes. You're with the bounty hunters. Mm-hmm. And then he arrives, and so there's no more words said in this episode after that point, but here is the sound of what happens, and it's just the sound design in this is just beautiful.
I'm not sure if you do this enough, but yeah, let's hear it.
Droplet hit.
It all happens between water droplets, and we saw when Mira was slashing the droplets how fast they were falling. So it's just like they were distilling time in a sense, like in just the fictional way, but in the reality of that world, that was all between two water droplets.
Well, it's kind of funny too because Mira points out, well, first with INM's original plans, like, well, you know, it's a good idea, but you got to grab his sword, not his foot or whatever, right?
Yeah,
so
that's right.
They try to grab the sword. Jack's reflexes are fast enough to grab it back, and then their whole plan falls apart at that point.
Well, also, he's too strong. Like, he's stronger than I, so he can't take away his sword. Yeah, it's I had a note on how each of them failed in their plan. Like, so Jack's too fast to let you take his sword and too strong for you to pull it away when he's holding it. He's actually quicker than a dagger or the dart, so those guys aren't good enough for that. He's too fast to be hit by Boris. His sword is too unbreakable to be challenged by Mira's sword. It immediately just goes right through it. And he's, instead of being overwhelmed by bombs, he catches every single one of them and throws them back before they explode.
There's like 50 of them. They're like little spiked balls, and he catches all the. Yeah, just catches all of them and just blows up Boris.
Yeah, like he's dead. He's dead. I mean, like Gennady might say, like, they're unconscious off screen in another dimension, but I think they're all dead.
No, yeah, there was actually someone brought that up to him, and they were. He was like, oh yeah, they just no one died, right?
Like, no one died.
If it looks like he said, if it looks like a human died, they're secretly a robot. never trust them.
I mean, we don't know if those characters aren't robots, but it's one of the coolest effects on the show I've ever seen. Just the pause into stark whiteness as he's slashing another one while the other two are just like, the other characters look at him like, wait, what? No.
Yeah, during that clip you play, there's that little, I don't know how to describe, like an echoing effect or something. Visually, as it goes into slow-mo, you can see Jack, like, that's when I think he cuts the chain and throws Ai into Jujunga, I think?
Yeah, into Jujunga, and then also slashes another character. And just those pauses on the sound, they kind of remind me of, like, 70s action films, specifically like a Bruce Lee one of, like, just Bruce Lee would kick somebody and then they'd be, like, slow down, like, doo 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 ruins them, doesn't even slow down, just keeps walking.
Keeps going.
Doesn't lose his hat even. And you feel so bad for Mira, especially because she's like, she has been preparing so much. She is a highly trained warrior. And he shattered her sword in a second and punched her in the face and broke her mask. And it's just done.
It means nothing to him. It was like a 10-second like interruption. And
he's just like, okay, yeah. Slash, punch.
You right. Actually see like as he sheathes his sword, he pauses for a second because Mira is pulling out a knife thinking like, may I make one last stitch effort here.
Yeah.
So he pauses like, and he kind of like has his back to her. And you kind of see like the sense of him being like, you want to try this? Like, we can do this.
Yeah.
And she kind of gets a tear in her eye and just drops
that's
it.
That's how
like,
it ends.
He's like, all right.
He defeats her with finally without doing anything.
He's just intimidation.
Yeah. He's just such a badass that he breaks her. And it's I wonder if he murders the other characters. He does not kill her. And I feel like that's just Jack's intrinsic sense of like, maybe this is a person who's doing this for a good reason, so I won't kill them. And that's why he gives her the chance to maybe like, you want to throw this knife, you can do it, but it's not going to go well for you.
Yeah, I mean, Jack throughout the show, he has an ethos of like, he doesn't start fights, but he'll finish them. He has no problem finishing. Like, he'll, like, you start something, he will, like, chop you up.
Yeah.
I feel like with Batman, which Genny also worked on, there's a nice bit of moral ambiguity at the end where it's like, you don't know how to feel because you're like, I'm glad the main character wasn't murdered, but also I feel really bad for this person who didn't get what they wanted because it was a very moral thing for them to do, in a sense, to want to free their people from slavery.
Yeah, though, even then, it is, you can't root for people who their plan is like, well, we're going to surprise attack and murder a guy.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Our plan.
Generally, not a good guy thing. I mean,
yes, even
you probably call a scenario that is.
Hey, don't
best,
put your rules on me.
Yeah. I mean, look, princess. I'm sorry, the princess's people won't be freed, and their enslavement continues.
It's also worth pointing out that like Aku's not like the most on the level kind of guy. So,
no.
Like, she offers up Jack to him, like, what does he care about your kingdom? Like, nah, like,
yeah,
I still want to keep it.
Yeah, I still
you're
want
rich.
These slaves.
I feel like if they had that conversation, if they had even had a conversation, Jack would have told, you're not going to get this. Like, Aku cannot be trusted.
Yeah.
That's exactly what he would say. And then maybe he would have helped her, but instead she thinks she can defeat him and then actually get something from Aku. Those are her mistakes. She tells everybody else how they're not smart enough for this. Those are some goofs by the princess as well.
Never trust a coup. So this episode was great. Thank you, Dave, for suggesting it.
Mm-hmm.
And like with everything we've done on this show, except for Bobby's World, I am angry now because it's like, now I want to watch all of this because I missed almost all of it. Or like in the case of other things, like I want to rewatch all this. So again,
it's all on Hulu if you got Hulu. Yeah. So it's
season 1-4. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yes, the final season
they
not on there yet. But all the Cartoon Network episodes are on there, including this one. So
yeah, that's 52 episodes to watch.
Pretty good.
I was going to mention also, this is an interesting take on, I kind of mentioned, Jack's almost the antagonist, or framed, I should say, as the antagonist of this episode. And there's another episode like that I almost picked, called The Tale of X-9. Henry, you've
seen it.
Yeah,
I don't know this one.
Okay.
I don't think I've seen it.
Well, not to spoil the whole episode or anything, but there's a similar sequence at the end, except it's a robot who's been blackmailed into hunting Jack.
Okay.
And by a coup, of course. And it's kind of like a noir feeling to it. But
nice.
But the ending actually feels almost like Aliens, because like Jack hides in a factory and the guy just keeps shooting everything in sight as he shoots at, you know, gets all finicky. And the thing is, with the Samurai Jack, the first three seasons, almost every episode is titled Jack and the Blank. So season 4 is where they started kind of expanding out to more experimental type stuff like this. Like, you wouldn't see an episode like this in season 1 or 2.
Yeah, actually on Hulu, all the episodes are just their number in Roman numerals, so it took me like 5 minutes of research to find this one. It's season 4, episode 4, I believe. Is that true? Yeah.
But season 4 is also where you got like, when I looked up episodes of what other people thought were the best Samurai Jack episode, there's a Ninja versus Ninja, which is where the entire episode is just black and white.
Mm.
And the premise of the episode is that Jack is perfectly stealthy in the light, the white, you know, art. And he's going up against a traditional ninja who's stealthy in the black. But again, this is all season 4 stuff where you get the really weird stuff. And that's where the show ended. So.
They got more ambitious each season too. Like, that's really impressive. Another of my favorites is where it is an all Aku episode, and it's where Aku, Jack is like, you know what? I will challenge you to a big fight. I won't even use my sword. Just me and you. You don't use your powers. I don't use my sword. We'll just both be in our skivvies and fight each other in the desert. And it's just so much cool action for action's sake. And they're both drawn in such like Jack Kirby, like big big body ways. And I just love it. And then there's great comedy at the end as, of course, Aku breaks his deal.
Well, they both come up with like plans and kind of was, I knew you tried that, so I tried this. Like, I knew you tried that, so I would try this to try that. Like, it's over and over.
One thing I forgot to point out is that this is a 4x3 show made in olden times.
Oh, yeah.
But in this episode and throughout the series, they're not afraid to be like, no, this one shot is 16x9 or 2.35x1 or whatever, just to make it more cinematic. They're like, this is a very cinematic shot. Let's add black bars in animation to this thing, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, like with the when they each describe their plan, they have the different art styles. You mentioned the four boxes. So one box has them in the campfire. Yeah. One box has like a
fire. Line. One's their eyes. One is the person describing the film.
Like you said, it's very like cinematic kind of feeling to it.
Yeah, they're not afraid to play with aspect ratio and composition.
And even when the show became truly widescreen in the last season, they still messed around with aspect ratio and all that kind of stuff. They still did it, even when they were actually widescreen.
So yes, great episode. Thanks, Dave, for the recommendation and all of the money. that's extra good. So Dave. Dave, do you have anything you want to plug or anywhere we can find you online, or do you choose to stay hidden? like a healthy person.
I mostly choose to stay hidden, but I will throw a bonus shout out. You know, you shout out every time almost anyway, but you know, Matthew J isn't here, but I recently became a patron of his for, you know, Conversation Evangelion, or is it Evangelion Conversation?
I think it's, I don't.
It's a tricky way of saying it, but the podcast is good, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it's Cartoons 101 on Patreon.
Yeah, you guys are both on the first two episodes, I believe.
Mm-hmm. We had a good time. I look forward to doing more with old Matt.
So, you know, I'm obviously a fan of you guys. I'm throwing a lot of money at you guys. I don't need an additional shout out, you guys.
We'll plug the hell out of ourselves soon. So yes, thanks for listening, everybody. I have been one of your hosts, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo, but I also want to tell you about our fabulous Patreon, which if you're listening to this a week ahead of time, you're on it, buddy, so thanks a lot. But if not, I'll tell you what you can get for the tiny, tiny amount of $5 a month. What you get every episode of this What a Cartoon Show and Talking Simpsons a week ahead of time and ad-free. You can be ahead of the game, ahead of all of those free chumps. We also have tons of other stuff at the $5 level. You also get all of Talking Critic, all of Talking Futurama, which it should be wrapping up by the time we launch this episode, I believe, but we're doing all the first season of that. And Henry will tell us all of the other millions of content pieces you will get for $5. What am I missing, Henry?
Well, if you want to hear our original going through of the first season of Simpsons, that's on there. I'm talking Simpsons season one exclusively on there. We go through a season wrap up at the end of every season of The Simpsons. We also do interviews with folks who worked on the show, such as our recent one with animation god David Silverman.
Oh, God, yes.
That was a ton of fun. And at the $10 level, you get a monthly premium video you can watch, like Bob and me going through every Simpsons short from Tracy Ullman in order, just so we can be truly complete in our Simpsons nostalgia.
And we have deleted scenes as well,
don't we? And the deleted scenes videos too. You can get it audio only at $5 a month, $10 a month. You get the video version of the deleted scenes and so many more cool things that come in. That is for sure.
Where can we find you, Henry?
Thank you, Bob. I'm HENEREYG on Twitter, and that's where I tweet out updates on these episodes too. So follow me for that information, plus my complaining about politics.
Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next week with the Cowboy Bebop episode Mushroom Samba. We'll see you then.
Newest and mightiest assassin. Bye bye, Samurai.